What and how do you share in meetings? And why? Welcome to episode 408 of The Recovery Show. This episode is brought to you by Audrey, Beth, Susan, Tara, Nancy, Shauna, and Bonnie. They used the donation button on our website. Thank you, Audrey, Beth, Susan, Tara, Nancy, Shauna, and Bonnie, for your generous contributions. This episode is for you and everybody else. We are friends and family members of alcoholics and addicts who have found a path to serenity and happiness. We who live or have lived with the seemingly hopeless problem of addiction understand as perhaps few others can. So much depends on our own attitudes, and we believe that changed attitudes can aid recovery.
Hey, before we begin, we would like to state that in this show, we represent ourselves rather than any 12-step program. During the show, we will share our own experiences. The opinions expressed here are strictly those of the person who gave them. Take what you like and leave the rest. We hope that you will find something in our sharing that speaks to your life.
My name is Spencer. I am your host today, and joining me today is Heather. Welcome to the Recovery Show, Heather.
Thanks.
We always like to open with a reading. What did you bring for us?
I'm going to start off with Courage to Change on page 308, November 3rd. This one is really hitting me right now in my recovery. By the time we reach Al-Anon, many of us are starving to be heard. We bask in the discovery that the Al-Anon rooms are safe places in which we can talk about the things that have been pent up inside. We share, and the people around us nod with understanding. They talk with us after meetings and mention how they identify, or they thank us for sharing. Finally, when we are heard and appreciated by others who have been there too, this attention can feel so refreshing that we may be tempted to overdo it. Many of us fear to let go of this trip to speak openly, as if it were our last opportunity. But when any member regularly dominates the sharing at meetings, the group suffers. In keeping with our tradition, the well-being of the group must come first. That's one reason sponsorship is such a valuable tool. Our needs for self-expression are real and should be addressed. A sponsor can give us the time and attention we need to talk about ourselves and our lives. And today's reminder, my needs are important. Al-Anon helps me to find appropriate ways in which to meet them. I will take good care of myself today. And the quotation from Sponsorship, What It's All About. Personal details are better left to a sponsor who can lend a consistent ear and keep a confidence. Someone who knows all about you and accepts you as you are.
That reading, one of the things that it addresses is what and how we share or don't share in our meetings.
I'll tell you, one of the things that this reading really points out to me is it takes me back to when I first walked into the rooms, and I can look at the progress I've made over my lifetime here and the definite contribution that my sponsor has made to my specific growth in sharing and also in my behavior in meetings in general. And I really have come to understand that the Al-Anon literature really does give us guidance about that kind of behavior. And I really know the impact that it's had on me and my own serenity and my own spirituality. I know when I started going to meetings, I was that person that walked in late after the meeting already started. I was going on my lunch break, hiding it from my spouse. I would go on my lunch break, walk in late, leave early. I didn't interact with anyone, which is funny because I am totally the social person. But I was afraid to let anybody really see the human that was walking into that room in all my imperfections. And I know that for a long time, I sat there at the meeting with my notebook and I took notes and I crafted like the perfect share. And I took all meetings sitting down and I wrote my 3-minute share out. And then I raised my hand at the end of the meeting. And I was like the second to the last or the last person to share. And I read my share from my notebook. Fast forward, when I got a sponsor, my sponsor was like, lose the notebook. I got to learn how to speak from the heart and really let my higher power speak through me and guide my words. But that was what I looked like in the beginning.
I like that transition that you highlighted there, going from crafting almost a presentation to speaking from the heart. My very first meeting, the memory that I have of my total share in that meeting is, and I'm probably not quoting exactly, but I said something like, my wife is in X hospital. I hope it works this time. And then I started crying. And that was the entirety of my share. That's the only one that I remember from early program. I'm pretty sure that I probably shared something in every meeting. I don't remember at all what it was for most of them. But that one stuck in my head for some reason.
It's a funny thing that you say that, because I've had my fair share of crying through 3 minutes, blubbering my way through what I thought I was trying to say. I've had my fair share of only talking about my mom or my fill-in-the-blank person that was bothering me at that time. But I also know that in the beginning, I really looked at sharing or what was happening in the meeting through my distorted thinking. And my distorted thinking said, I need to show up. I need to look like I have my shit together. I need to look like I'm going to give a share that everybody thinks is so meaningful. That was what I needed. I know now that I was motivated by praise and everyone thinking I was amazing, because I really just wanted to be seen and heard and feel like I belonged, because those people in those rooms felt so good to me. And I just wanted to belong with that.
Mm-hmm. A number of things came up here talking about the person whose alcoholism brought us to the program. Maybe he is bringing us to the program. Maybe is still in our life as an alcoholic. I think for many of us, that is where we are when we came. That was where I was when I came, I know. What was the other thing? Oh, how long to share? The first meeting I came to, which became my home group for a long time, in the opening, we always said, keep your sharing to 3 minutes or less. There was no timer, however. I have been to some meetings where there is a time limit. There is a person who times, and it totally works. And nobody is, oh, you're trying to control me. They're like, you got 30 seconds left. Thank you. Which surprised me the first time I heard it, because I don't think I'd ever been in a meeting with a timer. Talking about how what you shared changed over time, and if you can unpack that, how that happened.
Yeah, definitely. And I will say, this is exactly where I love referencing my sponsor, because she definitely was instrumental in paying forward the etiquette of sharing, not just with me, but with all of my sponsor sisters, my sisters in recovery. She would have meetings at her house where we would come, we would have fellowship, but then we would really practice sharing, where we would have to create our 10-minute share, learn how to craft it with a small amount of the problem, a larger amount of the solution, but knowing that really, this was where I could let my higher power really speak through me. And that was part of the process too. Letting my old distorted thinking go, which was mostly talking about the problem, the people in my life that were my story to begin with, and really starting to bring it back to myself every time I try to start focusing on myself. And then from there, really learning that as soon as I open my mouth to start my share, even though in my mind it had to be a full 10 minutes of perfection that would inspire the whole room, really, I got to understand that as soon as I open my mouth, you and all of the others in the room are already in your own story, thinking about whatever it is that you relate with, and then going down and into your share. And that's a funny thing that I had to really understand. And I would get so upset if I had in my mind exactly what I was going to share, and then my higher power took over and who the heck knows what came out of my mouth. And I would think after my share was done, oh no, I missed all the important parts. What I understand now is that my job was only start the conversation. And then everyone else in their sharing of their experience, strength, and hope would come in with all of the fine details, and together we could relate and recover. That was a really big lesson for me. I came in with the distorted thinking that I had to be the answer. That hits all my hot buttons, hyper-responsible, hyper-vigilant, controlling, manipulating, managing people's emotions. It hits all my character defects. trying to come in and be the perfect presenter. So to learn how to really let go of that and know that my higher power is going to guide my words and my higher power is going to guide the meeting, and it will be the right and perfect moment for all of us in the room. That was definitely part of what I had to learn on how to share.
That brings up an interesting question for me. As a newcomer, I didn't have any solution. All I had was problems. But I also feel that it was important for me to be able to talk about what was going on, how I was feeling. And maybe after a little while, I started to hear what other people were saying, and I could say, what I heard, wow, that's really interesting. Maybe I can try to pick that up and do something with it. But right at the beginning, I didn't have any solution. Does that mean I shouldn't have said anything? I don't think so. I actually had an experience recently. I was meeting with a friend after a meeting. We go for a walk after our meeting regularly. And he said, I was late because somebody in the meeting expressed a difficulty they were having that I had some experience with. And so I took the time to share some of my own experience with them on about that topic. If that person hadn't spoken up about the problem they were having, and maybe they didn't have a solution for it yet, that support couldn't have happened. And actually, I want to talk about support here for a moment, because the portion of the meeting that I was in was talking about the third tradition. And in particular, we looked at the first phrase of the third tradition, which says the relatives of alcoholics when gathered together for mutual aid, and then it goes on, may call themselves an Al-Anon family group, and so on and so forth. The questions that we were looking at today focused on this concept of mutual aid, and that we each share our own experience. We don't give advice. It said that right there in the reading that we had for that tradition. But we can share our own solutions or whatever that we've found. And then somebody else in the group may pick that up and say, oh, that's just what I was looking for. Or somebody might say something that, and this has happened to me, I don't know how many times, somebody shares something of theirs and maybe a solution that they found to a problem. And this light goes on in my head like, oh, I'm dealing with that. And I never thought about it. So even just sharing the problem, as long as we don't go on and on about it, can sometimes be part of that mutual aid reciprocity.
Right. I definitely relate with a lot of what you were just talking about. I could go on a bunch of different tangents, but I'm going to try to stay focused on the newcomer for a second. I've had a lot of outreach conversations or heard in meetings, especially I have two meetings that I consider home meetings. I've got a daily virtual meeting and I've got a weekly in-person meeting. And the daily virtual meeting grew from 10 people to 150 people on any given day through the pandemic. It's a very robust meeting. And the people who share in that meeting, there really are a lot of amazing sharing. And I've heard a lot of people say, I just sit in the background because I'm so intimidated. What I know to be true from my own experience, when I came in and I mentioned I would share for everyone else in the room so that they would get my message and see how amazing I was, that shifted along the way. And I learned that my sharing is about my recovery. And so no matter what I say, it's okay. I do have to let my higher power speak through me and get out of me whatever it is that I need to get out of me. And so anytime I get to have an outreach about that, that's usually what I talk about with the people. Your recovery isn't for you to show up and be perfect. I know that. Like, I'm the, you know, poster child for that lesson. But what I do know today is that no matter what I say, when I concept four, which I love, participation is the key to harmony. When I participate in my own recovery, my recovery grows. And that's what I tell anyone. There's no reason for any of us to be intimidated. As our traditions say, we come together as a group of equals. No one is better than another or more professional than another or more experienced, maybe more experienced because we've been in longer, but that doesn't mean we're any more recovered than the person sitting next to us. And that's one of the things that my sponsor has drilled into me is we're all in recovery. When I show up to any meeting at Al-Anon, we're all in recovery, no matter how long we've been here. We're all fighting our own demons on our own timeline with our higher power, which is driving that timeline. And it's not for me to know what anybody else needs. That's one thing that's so important, is that this process, it's so much bigger than me. It's so much bigger than you as individuals. That's why we have our traditions. It's about the group. It's about our primary aim and the unity for the greater good. And as long as we stand together, focused on our primary aim, all of it is exactly what it's supposed to be for our evolution. And I think that's so beautiful. So a newcomer can come in and hopefully they feel comfortable enough to just say whatever's on their mind. And they'll get it. I know I've gotten it over time. Working with my sponsors, showing up in meetings, participating, we learn by doing. And newcomers, if they keep coming back, as they say, they will learn by doing. It's inevitable.
I got a question recently from a listener, and I think it was shared in the Listening to You episode number 406. If you want to go back and listen to the question and my answer, but I'll try to say it here. Where the question was about, is talking about the alcoholic or alcoholics or addicts in our life, is that gossip? Or how is that gossip, maybe? And this person put forth the proposition that, yes, it is gossip because you're talking about not yourself. And my response to that was, yes, but my experience necessarily includes the person or persons whose actions have affected me and maybe brought me to recovery, or I've discovered them since I've been in recovery. What I need to do when I'm sharing is not to be complaining about that person and their actions, but talking about how they affected me, how I reacted, responded, or didn't respond, maybe, to those actions. In my case, I actually have my wife's permission to say, yes, my wife was the primary alcoholic in my life, is the primary alcoholic in my life, because when I started doing the podcast, I had to ask her, is it okay to mention you as my wife? Because if you listen to my story, it's pretty obvious who's the primary alcoholic, even if I don't say my wife. And so I had to ask her, and I have permission, but it's still in the context of Al-Anon recovery, the focus of what I share should be the effect on me, the things I did, the things I felt, not what she did. I extend that out to other people. I have talked many times about interactions I've had at work, for example, because until recently, that was where I spent at least half my waking hours. And so that was where I had a lot of interactions with people. I would say something like a coworker. Occasionally, I probably would say my boss, which is a little more distinct. But if you don't know where I work, then you don't know who my boss is. Maybe okay. But again, it's not about what they did. It's about how it affected me. What is your thought about that gossip thing?
I have learned a lot about gossip. Bottom line, quick answer is yes. Now I choose to believe that gossip is when I talk about anyone outside of me. It becomes an outside issue, which I think we're going to talk about a little bit later. But in the context of gossip, it becomes an outside issue. And so I do have to pull the focus back to me. I will say that as I learn about my character defects and my old habits, I used gossip or talking about other people as a form of cheap intimacy, false intimacy. And I know now that what I did was I would tell my woes, I would tell my story ad nauseam to anyone that listened in the hopes that they would become my allies. that they would A, prove me right, like I had to be right about the situation. They would B, show up for me in support because I'm the victim now. And then C, they would be my lifelong intimate partners in that intimacy. I see that now. I see what my motivations are. My sponsors always taught me, look at your motivations. Why are you having that conversation? Are you having that conversation to get any of those things that you just listed? Okay, then maybe that's not the healthiest thing. Today, I know that not only am I not really getting real intimacy, so that's just a lie I was telling myself. Now I go, okay, where do I need to go to get the support that I actually need? I need to go to my higher power. I need to go to my sponsor who can talk about the truth with me. And I don't need any allies. I am my own ally now through Al-Anon, working the steps, learning about myself, building a trusted fellowship. I now have a support system that starts with me, not with other people. So I go to myself and I parent my own emotions. I put my arms around myself. I give myself some loving hug and go, I know, honey, I know what you're feeling and that hurts. Right? I can parent myself. Mm-hmm. And I don't need to go to someone else for that. If I do, then I know who to go to, a trusted fellow, my sponsor, to have the conversations and get right thinking about that. And so that has really decreased my need for gossip or to talk about people. So now for me, the hardest part is when people out there who aren't in recovery, like people in my family, for example, do the gossiping. I now know that I used to go into that intimacy with my family, for example, to belong, to be part of that group. I don't want to anymore. It doesn't give me the same juice. I don't need that same like dopamine hit of belonging in that environment. And so I pull back. What my family thinks about that, I do know what they think about that. And it is none of my business, but I'm aware. But I can choose what I want to do with that or not. Sometimes I just need to sit there silently and not participate in the conversation. So it doesn't look like I'm literally just leaving the room because I want to be a part of my family. But sometimes I do have to put up boundaries. I have one person specifically that's close to me in my family that loves to talk about people. And that's really tough for me because it's not a value that I want to live my life aligned to. So I try really hard to live that way. So I do need to verbally say, hey, you know what? I don't know what's going on with them, but I don't want to be a part of this conversation. That doesn't always land well. I have to be aware of that, especially because this person is very close with me. But I know that it feels better to me now when I stand up, and that's an esteemable act that I need to choose to do so that I can feel good about myself.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that's interesting about gossip too, how do you feel about the concept of crosstalk in a meeting? Does that touch the gossip line? That's awesome. Is that closely connected? Is it a side cousin?
It's a cousin, I think, because one aspect of crosstalk is that we're talking about somebody else. They happen to be right there in the meeting, but we're not keeping the focus on ourselves when we're doing that. Some meetings allow crosstalk, some meetings don't. The meetings that I go to regularly do not permit crosstalk. My home group, interestingly, when I first came to Al-Anon, didn't have crosstalk, but there was no explicit prohibition of it. I know it was a very healthy meeting. And I think the example of the people who had been in there for a while about the way that they shared, the way that they spoke in the meeting as an example, just prevented that from happening. At the beginning, along with the 3 minutes, it said share only once during the meeting. And so if you can share only once, that really cuts down on responding to what somebody else said after they say it, unless you incorporate it into your share once. In another meeting, we actually had to have several group conscience meetings about a particular crosstalk incident that happened and how we wanted to say just the right words in the opening to prevent that from happening again. I don't need to go into the details, but somebody felt very unsafe after a crosstalk mm-hmm. incident and brought it to the group conscience. And we said, okay, we have always said no crosstalk, but maybe we need to say a little bit more about what crosstalk is. And we ended up with a paragraph, and we ended up with a really long paragraph. We cut it down to a shorter paragraph. And then the pandemic happened and everything changed. And we had to add to it, don't use the private chat in Zoom to respond to what somebody said or whatever. There was one meeting that I went to for a while that explicitly said in the meeting description, this is an old style meeting with crosstalk. I was fairly new in my program at that point, and I probably crosstalked a lot more than I should have. So for me as a newcomer, the no crosstalk rule was, I think, very helpful in learning how to shut up and listen, which turns out to be a key part of my recovery process.
I definitely want to hit on the crosstalk and the safe place. So don't let me forget to go there, because that's a hot button for me too. And I will just say too that I expect, you know, I'm a rule lover like many of us. God bless us in Al-Anon. I'm a rule lover just like the next person, because it helps me feel safe. I'll get back to that. But what I have come to understand is, my sponsor always says, and I know now that this is from the detachment bookmark, I don't need to stop the chaos and I don't need to start the chaos. So I'll touch on that a little bit. You know, I looked to meetings to help me feel comfortable in my own pain. And what I now know is that I got opportunities to learn to accept others instead of needing to change them to feel okay. That's an internal job for me. And I don't need the protection from the group or anyone else when crazy was happening. I could just let it happen. I could step back from the results and be a witness without owning it as mine. And that was a really hard lesson for me, because I come into program and I come into these meetings without a really healthy self-view, without really good communication skills. As we read in some of the traditions, some families don't allow for open talking. Some families don't allow for what we would call cross talk of any form. My family of origin, we were run ragged by a pretty rageful kind of parent who had a really warped sense of reality that didn't match my sense of reality. And we always orbited her in a pretty abusive and critical environment. And I didn't know how to have healthy conversations to express my thoughts or my differences. And as a child, I didn't have any power to do that. So I always took things personally. And through that, I learned to jade, justify, argue, defend, and explain. And so I spent a lifetime forcing solutions through my own self-righteousness. And I thought, if I could just say the right thing to convince people, they would see me. Now, I know that's not true now. I know that was my God-shaped hole. And I've spent a lot of time working on filling that void with foundational love and acceptance that I learned through working my stuff in Al-Anon. But I also have read the traditions, and I think it's really interesting. I look at tradition six, and tradition six is our family group thought never endorse, finance, or lend our name to any outside enterprise. The funny thing about that is, when I read about not having to be overly supportive of anyone other than me, it's about my personal integrity being of interest. I don't need to overly support people, which I think about when we talk about crosstalk. Why would we? Why would we need to crosstalk with anybody, which means responding, oh, I think you're so amazing in that share, Spencer. Why do we need to do that? We don't need to do that according to tradition six. And I love tradition seven being fully self-supporting. I can take responsibility for my own way, and I don't need anyone else to tell me what needs to be dictated or held over upon me in my sharing. So I think that's it's an interesting thing as we listen and we talk about crosstalk. I do have two meetings, home meetings, that talk about it differently. In my in-person home meeting, we have no timed sharing. So as a rule person, my circuits get a little bit worked up when I have no timer telling people that they're talking for too long. It's a funny thing. And we also don't have the you can only speak once rule. And so people, I myself have raised my hand multiple times in one meeting, and I have to think about, am I being domineering? Getting back to crosstalk, my virtual daily meeting, it's a little bit of a slippery slope because we allow for loving crosstalk in the spirited, loving interchange that we read about in some of our literature. And so for me, I have had a lot of conversations with my sponsor. I've read the literature. I've read all of our traditions. I've called World Service because I want to really understand from an Al-Anon perspective what's happening here. So I try to educate myself. And I love what our literature describes in the traditions about, again, coming from that alcoholic home where we weren't able to speak without receiving criticism. That really resonates with me. So the concept of someone listening to me, sitting in judgment, or even having a loving response, I don't want to even think about someone else's response. That becomes an outside issue. I want to keep it internal to myself. And the funny thing about that is I've actually taken the topic to my group business meeting, and we have discussed changing it. And there are always people for changing it. They see maybe my points, or they read the traditions, or they call World Service on their own. And there are always people who do all of the same things but end up against it. And I love that, even though it gets me a little bit because I want to be right someday. I love that because we are all here with our own hot buttons, our own recovery path, thinking our own way about things, and that's perfectly okay. So that brings me back to tradition two, where I have to defer to our group's higher power and our voting. And my sponsor walks me through just leading by example in my own sharing so that I speak because I make the decision. I choose to speak without crosstalking in my meeting. So even though it's allowed in that meeting, I try really hard not to do that. And I try to lead by example. And other people can do whatever they feel comfortable doing. That's not for me to decide for them.
I have a friend who will say, I heard someone say in this meeting XYZ, and that really resonated with me. So that sort of crosstalk without directly mentioning the other person. But again, this is where trying to draw a hard line gets tricky. There's a fuzzy line because if I'm in a meeting and somebody says something that really maybe enlightens something for me or resonates with me, I want to respond about how that is for me. If I can't say, wow, this idea of such and such really struck me, I hadn't thought about it in that way, is that crosstalk?
Well, some may say yes.
Right? Some right. People would say yes. So we each have to find our own comfort point and our own understanding of whatever the rules and traditions of a particular meeting are, and our own self-boundaries. Whether the meeting might allow something or not, we can choose and might choose for our own health.
Well, and that's actually exactly what really hit me with that Courage to Change reading, because I can't even count on two hands the number of times I've gone to my sponsor and said something was uncomfortable for me in this meeting. And I have been uncomfortable when people have crosstalked. I have been uncomfortable where one person has flagrantly talked about the other person to the other person in the meeting. Take it offline. That's fine. Say what you got to say, but it doesn't have to take up the time in the meeting. And we do read about that in our traditions, but that's not why it makes me uncomfortable. So I need to do the work with my sponsor to understand exactly why I'm feeling uncomfortable. Do I have something in my past where that's a historical thing? Do I have a resentment or a fear that's coming up when I hear that happening? For me, I was raised by a critical parent, and so I do. But I've done a lot of work on that. I think the key for me, and I do this with my own sponsors too, is if you're in a meeting where something is uncomfortable, call me. Let's talk about it. Doesn't mean you're wrong, they're right, or vice versa. It just means this is a hot button for you. So let's talk about it and work through it. And I love, that's what I want to talk about, safe space. Ooh, there's a lot there with that term. Our meetings are safe. my sponsor maybe old school, or she's pretty hardcore about that. And she's, you know what, that's a trap. So I can launch myself into that trap of trying to make sure that everybody's doing what they need to be doing so that I'm in a safe space. I didn't grow up in a safe space. My family today is still not safe. And so I have to choose where I place myself in relation to them and the conversations that I go into with them. In meetings, I've been approached by men to go out for coffee and talk program. I have to set very specific boundaries about that. I am married, and so I have to set very specific boundaries about that. I've been approached by fellows in outreach who only want to talk gossip, because we were talking about gossip. I have to set very specific boundaries about that. I've been called out in meetings for offering gentle reminders of the traditions. People get pretty heated in those moments. That's happening right now in my daily virtual meeting where we're talking about double winners and speaking from the Al-Anon perspective. So when I issue a gentle reminder, hey, our script says we'd like to talk from the Al-Anon perspective, everyone has their own opinion about that. And if we have a discourse in the meeting about that, is it a safe space? I don't really know the answer to that. What I do know is I have sat in judgment of others. That is one of my core defects, and I do work on that regularly. And so I know for me, when I'm in judgment of someone else, I'm not a safe space. I am not inside of myself safe. I know our literature says that we can find serenity and even happiness, whether the alcoholic or fill in the blank with any other person is drinking or someone else's behavior bothers us or not. I've learned that it's really no one's job to make me feel safe or take care of my feelings. My sponsor always says that. She's like, that's not his job. It's my job. And we do have traditions that talk about some flagrant abuses within the rooms. And as a group, we can choose to discuss those by taking a group conscience or deciding if we need to make any decisions about the structure of our meeting. But for me, that becomes a very personal choice. And I don't put that responsibility on anyone else. It's my responsibility.
I want to follow up on the, what you said, double winner question. Inevitably, and I think more often, maybe with online meetings, we will get an alcoholic showing up in our meeting, sometimes because they just don't realize that Al-Anon is not AA. Sometimes because actually we've had a couple of people show up in one of my meetings recently where they were like, I was told that I should check out an Al-Anon meeting by the people in my AA group. My personal belief from knowing a bunch of people is every alcoholic, and I would say every alcoholic, has a relative or friend who is alcoholic, almost without exception. There may be a few exceptions, but almost without exception. And thus qualify to be an Al-Anon under our third tradition, which says the only requirement for membership is that there be a problem of alcoholism in a relative or friend. How to guide them to, and this is where my controlling wants to kick in, as you said, sharing about the Al-Anon issues and not the alcohol issues in their lives is, I don't know, tricky? At least for me, my usual solution to that, if you can call it a solution, is to let the people in the meeting who have been there for a while and know how to do the Al-Anon thing, but who are also members of AA, let those people talk to the AA who's accidentally or on purpose wandered into our meeting. The local intergroup, the AA intergroup, lists all recovery meetings on their website, and Al-Anon meetings are tagged as AL or something, which is not at all obvious to somebody who's new to their program. And they might think it's just another kind of AA meeting because, hey, it's listed on the AA intergroup website, right? So I try to give space, but I'm pretty solid in my recovery. And for somebody who's not, I can't take responsibility for that, but I can't understand that their reaction to that might be very different than mine. In one particular meeting, this has come up several times in our group conscience, there was a lot of conversation about it and about what we should or shouldn't do. And yet we have the table tent that says, only talk about Al-Anon here. Keep the outside issues outside. And it's got the pile of boxes of outside issues. And one of them says other 12-step programs. I don't expect anybody to actually look at that and read it. This is a small meeting. And I think for small meetings, it's more of an issue than for a larger meeting where it's one person out of 20 or one person out of 100, where it's one person out of six. It stands out a lot more too. I don't know. I don't have a good answer for it, except for my feeling that this person might need Al-Anon. And I don't want to be the person who kicks them out when they actually need to be there. But I have said to somebody who's joining the meeting before the meeting starts, or when we're doing introductions as newcomers, if it's somebody I don't recognize, I'll say, hey, are you here for Al-Anon? I had one once, at least recently, the guy says, I was looking for an AA meeting. I said, yeah, you might do better to find an AA meeting, particularly if you're new in AA. But even that feels a little, but I don't know. I'm going to stop talking because clearly I'm wandering into a minefield.
I'll pick up the baton here because I've had a lot of conversations about this with my sponsor and other fellows. And I also have attended double winner meetings from the Al-Anon perspective. I've attended open AA meetings. I also am familiar with other programs. It's not just the two. There are plenty. Also sponsor double winners, and I love working with them. But before I go into that, I'm going to preface by saying I didn't understand what the hullabaloo about this was when I first started coming in and listening about the hullabaloo about someone speaking from their other perspective. And so when I started talking about it with my sponsor, there were big question marks in my mind. Because when I was growing up, I didn't associate my rageful parent with alcohol. That was there, but I didn't know about alcoholism. It was just our normal everyday life. I just thought she was a psycho. For me, it wasn't because of alcohol that my life was a mess. That was never part of my understanding until many years later, multiple therapists later, and Al-Anon. Then I was like, oh, I get it. But it made a lot more sense. I wasn't living in a crisis situation at home in the moment when I was asking the question, why is this a big deal? And that was the first thing that my sponsor said to me. Some people come into Al-Anon and they are living in crisis right now, whether they're spouse is abusively, violently alcoholic, or whether their kid is going through something that is scary. If they're in a scary alcoholic situation and they come into this room as a safe space, you know, I get it here, and it's important that we talk about it really being a safe space, and they hear someone identifying as an alcoholic and talking about how drunk they're always getting or how drunk they used to get, that could be a real painful thing for them. And that made a lot more sense to me than just not letting people talk about their stuff. The other thing that I will say is as I started going to double winner meetings, I would hear the stories of my family members, my dad, my mom, my sister, myself, from an Al-Anon perspective, even though alcoholism was rampant throughout my family experience. And that helped me start building compassion for people suffering from alcoholism, both the people using and the people experiencing the side effects. You know what I mean? So I was able to really see everyone's experience from a different perspective and have less judgment on the person abusing the alcohol. That helped me really get more open to having more conversations with people who identify as double winners. And so when I was able to do that, and then I started sponsoring people, we really do talk about the differences between AA and Al-Anon. The two of us were working together. And it's enlightening for me. I love it. I learned so much about 12-step recovery process through the eyes of AA. It's fascinating, really. But one of the things that I know is it is drilled into them that they must come into the rooms and identify, hello, my name is Heather, I'm an alcoholic. That is a really important piece of humility in that program and of shedding their former demons, so to speak. And what I relate with dramatically about that is I'm here, but by the grace of God, now not. I could be in AA, I could be in EDA, Gambler's Not, I could be in any one of those programs. If thinking wasn't my problem and one of the other things was my problem, I could be in any other realm. And but by the grace of God, I come into Al-Anon, not really having the drink as my problem, but having the think as my problem. And that helps me bridge the gap with anybody else who's coming in and looking for recovery. And it helps me feel really compassionate with anyone coming in and looking for serenity in the rooms of Al-Anon. However, having said that, our literature says, right, we speak from the Al-Anon perspective.
Yeah.
And whether someone feels that is something written in the service manual in the preamble and just a quote-unquote, I'm using air quotes here, guideline, or whether someone feels that's black and white written and we have to do it, that's for every individual person to decide for themselves. But what I do is when I go into a meeting and they say, here's the script, we speak from the Al-Anon perspective, that's the guidelines for the meeting. And so that's what I want to see happening in the meeting. When I put all of that together, then A, I sit in meetings. I try not to sit in judgment. I try to listen for the gifts when someone starts talking about their other experience. I try to not be in judgment in my own mind and just let it go and know that it's not my responsibility to do anything. I have sat in meetings looking for long timers to step up and go, hey, we don't do that here. But again, that's a hot button for me. I was always looking for my father to protect us from my mother, and that didn't happen. So I have every right, just as anybody else has every right in any meeting, to speak up about someone maybe crossing a line in a tradition, and anybody has that right. So the thing about that is when someone comes in and really continues to talk about their alcoholic experience, which is actually what happened in my virtual meeting a few days ago, there was like 10% Al-Anon in an 8-minute share and 90% the alcoholic side of her experience. And that's not for me to judge by any means. That is not for me to judge. But it is, I'm a service person in that meeting, and I take that meeting very seriously. And so what happened in that moment was, after that person finished their share, I didn't interrupt them. They finished their share. Before we started the sharing, the secretary was like taking her time to get ready to call on people to do the sharing. So I just unmuted. I said a quick, hey, folks, just want to say a little reminder, as our script says, that we speak from the Al-Anon perspective and not from our other programs. And I just wanted to say that reminder. I don't know if that's exactly what I said. It was blacked out, but look along those lines. And I will say the ironic thing was this meeting topic was about humility, which is funny in and of itself. And almost every single share that went on, and it's an hour meeting for 2-minute sharing, so we have maybe 20 good shares, everyone talked about one side or the other side of us not allowing, or me making that comment. And I got tons of pings during the meeting. I got multiple phone calls after the meeting, and all of that's fine. It's healthy discourse for me. I am grown enough and healed enough in my recovery that I wasn't like, going to jump off a bridge. But I definitely am introspective about it to say that is very interesting. What do I want to do with that for my behavior going forward? And that's for me to talk about with my sponsor.
Yeah. Speaking of timing, we're coming up on an hour. And yeah, there's so much more to talk about here.
That went fast.
I think we could keep going for another hour, but we've been here almost an hour. So let's see if we can wrap up what we talked about today, and maybe we can come back in another episode and talk about things like service and meeting business and some of the things that we just didn't even get to today.
Yeah, Spencer, this has been really great. I think one of the things that I'm really just settling into here as we wrap up is that through a sponsor's help and through sitting in meetings, I learn how to share. I learn how to sit in meetings. And all of that translates into how I want to live my life, both in the rooms and outside of the rooms. And that is really important. And I'll use one story that I remember really had a massive spiritual awakening for me. I was sitting in a virtual meeting. I was just an attendee. The secretary was helping the new secretary take over and run the meeting, and she was fumbling. And everything inside of me was bubbling up. Oh my gosh, this is an hour meeting. We've got 130 people on. Let's get it together, people. We look like we don't know what we've got going on. It was hitting all of my hot buttons. And I watched the outgoing secretary be so gentle and so loving with the incoming secretary. When everything inside of me was like, can I just take over and get it done? They didn't do that. They were just beautiful. And that person and I happened to be fellows and friends. And so I called them after the meeting and I was like, wow, what I just learned in that meeting was it is far more important to show someone loving support and help them find their way and let them have success in doing that, however long it takes, than for me to show up right and show up getting it done perfectly and finishing the meeting without any glitches. That was a monumental spiritual awakening for me. And basically, those are all the slogans. How important is it? Live and let live, let go and let God. So many of the slogans fit into that one moment. And I get that learning. I get those spiritual awakenings by just suiting up, showing up, continuing to share, even when they miss the mark sometimes, continuing to share, continuing to participate in my own recovery and participate in the fellowship that has become my family.
Thank you. Well, thank you for this conversation. And like I say, we're going to have to continue it at another date. I asked you to bring music. Let's start with the first one here.
Our first musical selection, which you can listen to on the website at recovery.show/408, is from Kelsey Ballerini called Overshare. And this is really funny. I think about that Courage to Change reading, and I know how I would overshare pre-program and how so many people do. And I love how my sponsor taught me how to share.
In this section of the podcast, we talk about our lives in recovery. How have we experienced recovery recently? One of the things I want to talk about is quite recent, which is this morning was in a meeting. We were talking about Tradition 3, as I mentioned earlier, which is the one about mutual aid. One of the questions had to do with how do I keep myself in the moment? How do I keep myself where I am rather than having my mind wander off somewhere else, which just happened to me like a few seconds ago. My mind wandered off somewhere else. You won't hear this in the recording because I'll edit it out, but it did happen. And when I looked at that question, I had to say, wow, I'm not very good at this. My mind is always wandering off somewhere else. And I think this might be something I need to bring to my higher power in step 6 and 7. Help me keep my focus where I am rather than in the future, in the past, just on something I see out the window. Or when I'm in an online meeting, I might have several windows open on my screen, and maybe I should practice closing everything except the one involved with the meeting. So that was an insight that I had this morning, because that question, which is from the book Reaching for Personal Freedom, by the way, which is a wonderful book about using the steps, traditions, and concepts in your personal life, and it has lots of shares and lots of questions for thinking about those concepts and traditions and steps, personal aspect of these things. And yep, you can use them in your life just because, oh, a family is a group. Yeah, so it is. Okay, I can use traditions in my family too, huh? All right, if you say so. Anyway, so that was one thing. Also, there was a question about what is mutual aid? Because the tradition says we gather for mutual aid or provide mutual aid or something. I don't remember the exact wording, and I'm not going to go look it up because I don't have to be perfect. And I was like, okay, here's, I think, an example of how I understand mutual aid today as opposed to how I might have understood it before program. Recently, a friend of mine texted me and said, it's been a hell of a week, call me. So when I was in the right place, I called him. I said, hey, how you doing? He said, oh, so my daughter got in a horrible car accident and she's in the hospital. I don't know how she's going to be affected by this long term yet. Don't know what the medical outcome is. I'm just really shaky, not knowing what's going to happen, not knowing what I'm going to be able to do or not do. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of anxiety. And I said something like, that sounds like it really sucks. And I will keep you in my prayers and thoughts and hope for a positive outcome from this situation that we don't know where it's going to go. I listened. I expressed my feeling of support. But I knew that there was nothing I could do that would make the situation better. There was nothing I could do that would change the way he felt, except to say, yeah, I'm here. I hear you. I feel for you. I think about how I might have reacted to that pre-program. I imagine that I would have been there with, have you tried this? Have you thought about that? What's actually going on? What has the doctor said? What are they doing? Do you know if you have the right doctors? Is she in the right place? I didn't do any of that. And I view that as learning in this program, learning in meetings, learning in one-on-one conversations with people, learning from my sponsor and from being a sponsor, that in general, that kind of response is not helpful. It might make me feel better because I feel like I'm doing something. And I have to learn to sit in that unease of not being able to do anything except say I care. So those are a couple things that have come up for me recently that I can see a change in me from the recovery process that I'm clearly still exploring and still working. How about you?
Yeah, I love that. I don't do the New Year's resolutions thing because usually like January 5, I'm done that long. And so I generally speaking for the last few years have just picked an intention that I want to just try and keep mindful on. And so my intention this year is the word humility with the concept of understanding when to be big, because there are times when I want to let this big, beautiful light shine of mine. When to be small, and there are times when I don't need to dominate. And when to just be, when I can just be present and know that nothing is needed from me right now. And so I've been really working on that. And I think tradition 9 is what's front and center for me. There are a couple of questions in past recovery that I love. When I'm thinking of not needing to really be overly rigid in defining rules, that's something that's important to me now. Not needing to exert a bunch of control to feel safe, which we talked about a little bit today. And really allowing that trust in a higher power to just really be present and know that I am supported and protected along this journey. And that, it's all going to work out as it needs to for my evolution. I look at those questions like number 4 is, how flexible am I? How flexible is my group? How may we encourage flexibility without creating chaos? Oh boy, that one comes up for me everywhere, not just in Al-Anon meetings, but in my home life, in my job. Right now, I've been with my company for several years. I've been in my current role for just over a year, and I'm looking for my next role because along that year, things happened and I didn't feel safe. I'm just going to say it like that with a bunch of air quotes and a modicum of humility and laughter. But the truth of the matter is I could stay in this role and be probably fine because I've healed myself a lot through this journey, but I don't want to. I don't enjoy the culture that I'm in. And so I can be flexible and not have to force a bunch of solutions to get myself to feel safe in my job, I'm doing okay. I feel pretty safe on a day-to-day basis. But I am actively looking for my next role where I can go into a culture that might be something a little bit more where I want to live my life. And so I actually have an interview next week, and I'm really excited about it. And that leads me to the next question that I love, which is that past recovery tradition 9, number 19. Do I speak up when others' actions are unacceptable, or am I so fearful of confrontation that I'm willing to have peace at any price, even the loss of my serenity? That is so important. Because of the culture that I grew up in with my rageful mom, I was the family dynamic person that always met up to her. That's not okay. You can't do that. And I actually became as aggressive as she was. So I actually have no problem speaking up when others' behaviors are unacceptable. My contrary action is learning when to speak up and when to not speak up. And if I had some things go on, like I mentioned in my role at work, that were unacceptable to me. And I had to choose, do I have a confrontation with my boss or with the people that I work with, or do I not and just do what I need to do to get myself into the next right place? And I've done a little bit of both. I've talked with my sponsor, made sure that my intentions and my motivations were honest and coming from a place of not necessarily distorted thinking, but from rational thinking, from my serenity. And I feel good about that. And so I've had a few conversations and said, I'm not willing to work with this. So I will be looking for another role. And I've been really honest about that. And that is a little scary, but I feel supported and protected in all ways, including within myself. And this is really interesting to think about what I need to be safe. And I can provide that for myself now. And I know that my higher power really is providing that for me. And I feel super about it. I think that's what I'm facing right now.
Thank you. Looking forward here, I have thought, and I think this came from a suggestion from a listener, or I'm sure it came from a suggestion from a listener, but I have thought that it's time to review the 12 steps in this podcast. We did episodes on the 12 steps in the first year of the podcast. So that was a decade ago, and maybe it's time to come back and look at them again. I actually was inspired, now that I think about it, I was inspired by an AA podcast that I listened to called Recovered. He's going through the AA 12 steps using the literature to prompt the discussion about each step. Reading a paragraph from the literature and saying, okay, what does this say to you? And I thought, oh, that's an interesting approach. I think I will try that. So I'm going to be reaching out for volunteers for each of the steps. I already have one for step 4, but the others are open. Send email to me, feedback@therecovery.show. If you would like to participate in a conversation about one of the 12 steps, and I'll be sending out a formal invitation to participate to the email list, which you can also join the email list by sending an email to feedback@therecovery.show. We do welcome your thoughts on the steps or on any other topics. You can join our conversation here. Leave us a voicemail or send us an email. And Heather, how can people do that?
You can send a voice memo or email to feedback@therecovery.show. Or if you prefer, you can call us and leave us a voicemail at 734-707-8795. You can use the voicemail button on the website to join the conversation from your computer. We would definitely love to hear from you. Share your experience, strength, and hope, or your question about today's topic of sharing in meetings. If you have a topic you'd like to talk about, let us know. If you would like advance notice for some of our topics so that you can contribute to that topic, you can sign up for our mailing list by sending an email to feedback@therecovery.show. Put email in the subject line to make sure it's easier to spot.
Our website is therecovery.show and some other aliases. We have all the information there about the show, which primarily includes notes for each episode, links to the books we read from, whatever other literature we might have talked about, videos for the music, and there are some links to other recovery podcasts and websites. Heather, what was the second song that you chose for us?
Our second musical selection, which is available on the website, is Keep Talking by Rita Ora. And I love the concept in this song that I can take what I like and leave the rest, making my own decisions to take the high road, and that I'm not dependent on what you say.
We have three letters from listeners today. First one is from Amanda, who says, "Thank you so much for your service with this podcast. It's so helpful. Could I ask for a regrets episode, or perhaps one focused on powerlessness over distorted thoughts, stinking thinking? Maybe one where many voices call in and leave their ideas. I'm really struggling with moving on from the past. I can't get over feeling that I wasted my life, wasted my time, and it's hard for me to be in the day. Also, are there any daily reader meetings that happen after 8 a.m. Pacific time? I know of a 30-minute daily reader meeting out of South Africa at 4 p.m. South Africa time, which is 8 a.m. California time, and 9 a.m. UK time, but none of that work for my time zone. I'd love one that's between 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. California time. Do you know of any such meetings? Thank you. A. Regret. Okay. I'm powerless over distorted thoughts, stinking thinking. Moving on from the past looks like another part of that theme. I'm not sure right now what I would do with it, but I'll put it on the back burner and something may percolate up to mix that metaphor up totally. Or if you have thoughts about such an episode, might want to co-host such an episode, definitely feedback@therecovery.show, and we can put that together. I don't know of daily reader meetings in that time range, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. California time. I'm sure they exist, and so I'm putting it out to the collective. If you participate in such a meeting, please let me know so I can pass it on. Thanks. And another Amanda, not the same one, writes, "For my professional development, I am gaining a lot of insight from a book and podcast that literally has the slogan, 'Everything is figure outable.' Has anyone else on the show worked through the cognitive dissonance where program slogans like 'figure it out' is not a slogan, directly conflict with other things that are helpful with outside resources? I also care a lot about empowerment and empowering yourself. I work with youth, especially women, but that language is so opposite to the 12 steps. I'd love some experience, strength, and help on this." Again, I'm going to invite your response. If you have thought about this, if you have worked through some of this in your own program, please contribute your experience, strength, and hope for everybody else and for Amanda. I responded to Amanda and I said, "Personally, I believe that not everything is figure outable. For example, I don't think emotions are figure outable. They just are. In a personal example, the way in which my rage was removed as I was beginning to work the Al-Anon program, if I could have figured out how to not be rageful on my own, I definitely would have done so. So I think that was not figure outable in that sense. Lastly, I feel like using the 12 steps as a tool for change actually can be and has been for me immensely empowering. When I understand what I actually have power over, I can multiply the effects of the power I do have because I'm not uselessly wasting it on things that I can't change." So just a few sort of off-the-cuff thoughts there. I'm sure there's a lot more, and I'd love to hear from you if you have ideas, thoughts about those questions. Lori writes, "Do you have any episodes or an idea for a new topic to address the struggle of parents living with the young adult both during addiction and through recovery. I would imagine that there are quite a few people in this situation who have the young adults in their life using substances to mask a mental health issue. There's that feeling of hope once they seem to have tackled the substance, but then the raging challenge of the mental health issue they were trying to mask rears its ugly head and re-impacts the whole family. You are now faced with a different yet familiar set of challenges under your roof on a daily basis. I've noticed that the Al-Anon principles still apply, but was wondering if you have any specific episodes like this. I have a number of episodes where parents share their experience dealing with their kids' addiction and probably mental illness. I just don't remember specific episodes at this time that might come under that category. However, you can find all the episodes that are tagged with parent. You can go to therecovery.show/tag/parent, or you can go to therecovery.show, click on search in the menu at the top of the page, and then scroll down into the tags, and you'll see the tag parent there as well, and you can click on that and find those episodes. I see 7 episodes tagged with that parent tag. One of them is about being the sober parent, so that one doesn't apply. Heather, I want to thank you again for bringing us your experience, strength, and hope on this topic of sharing in meetings, which, as I said earlier, we didn't even touch on all the things we wanted to touch on because it was such a dynamic conversation. And so we're going to close with your third song. Why don't you tell us about that?
Okay. So some of you may know that there is a musical called Dear Evan Hansen, and the song You Will Be Found is one of my all-time favorites. But I love the Jennifer Nettles version for this podcast. You may know her as the lead singer from the country band Sugarland. This really speaks to me about the fellowship that I gain by participating in meetings and in Al-Anon. And if I can be vulnerable and authentic and open up in meaningful ways, I will come to this safe space and find my home. Hope you enjoy.
Thank you for listening, and please keep coming back. Whatever your problems, there are those among us who have had them too. If we did not talk about a problem you are facing today, feel free to contact us so we can talk about it in a future episode. May understanding, love, and peace grow in you one day at a time.